The Mike Missinelli Show.
And welcome to a Thursday preseason game number two tonight as the Eagles will take on the New England Patriots. It is Jason Martinez filling in for Mikey Miss for the program today. Mike Miss open out at Ramblewood Country Club today. It's myself along with Tyler Zuli, and we've got you for the next 4 hours on a pretty big day. I guess this is the biggest day of the NFL preseason. It's now preseason game number two, where it used to be three, but now it's number two because there's only three. And I imagine a week from tomorrow, we'll see kind of just a skeleton roster on the field. But it's the Eagles. It's the Patriots tonight. The Eagles are a home dog tonight. They're getting a point at Lincoln Financial Field. Not that that matters. But there's a lot still to, obviously, to be determined. We saw preseason game week one last week, and we took some things out of that. We took some things out of that that we go, okay, all right. But yeah, Nick Sirianni looks organized. He looked professional. I heard how Jaws termed it earlier, talking with Anthony from the Mike Miss Open. And, you know, you look at the game tonight, and what are we going to see? It's anyone's guess. There's so many question marks when it comes to the Eagles in this season. And coming up in just a little couple minutes, we're going to play Jaws' kind of assessment coming into the season. It's really brief, by the way. And I agree with Jaws because I don't know how we're supposed to go into a season with expectations when the amount of question marks regarding the Eagles are so plentiful. I mean, they're at every turn, whether it's surrounding health of players, whether it's surrounding young players and their growth. Guys like Jalen Reagor is having a much better camp by most accounts than he did a year ago, by just the fact that they're not in COVID world like they were a year ago, where they had no offseason. The growth of a young quarterback and Jalen Hurts. And we're going to talk about Jalen Hurts today. And Tim McManus is going to join us coming up at 4:30 and what he expects to see tonight. And I think we've all learned our lesson when it comes to preseason in sports or sports on paper, not to go crazy because we've been burned too many times. And I look no further than when the Eagles won the Super Bowl in the 2017 season. We didn't see that one coming. And that's it just kind of happened out of nowhere that all of a sudden the Eagles were really good and they rode it and it was their turn and it was their fate to win the Super Bowl, and they did. And then when you have these seasons where you expect a ton and then it doesn't deliver. So you can't judge things on paper. Sports are played on the field of play. And this year, I just don't even know how you go into this season this year with any level of expectation based on the knowledge or amount of question marks that we have. I really don't understand it. So let's play this clip of Jaws. Anthony was talking with him earlier, and Anthony asked Jaws the simple question, you know, what do you expect from the Eagles this year? And here's how Charles responded.
I'm not sure. And I think it's kind of the opinion of a lot of people that follow this team closely, that follow the organization closely. Yeah, there's some optimism. And I actually was very impressed with the scrimmage on Tuesday. I saw some really good things. Defensive line kicking butt, man. And this could be it really is going to be the heartbeat of the team, the defensive line. If the offensive line is healthy, and you know, I hate to use that word if, but based on history, you know, we've sustained a lot of injuries in that offensive line. And you know, you can't say, oh, these guys are getting younger and they're going to be healthier. It's just not true. We hope they have a fortunate season injury-wise. I think the offensive line could be good as well, very good as well. So I think those are the parts that give me optimism.
So his initial answer was, I don't know. And it's very rare, mind you, for a guy like Jaws who breaks down a ton of tape, talks to a lot of people, for his initial answer to that question to be, I don't know. Because there are so many question marks. Is Nick Sirianni going to be a good game day coach? Is Nick Sirianni going to be a guy that can exploit the opposition's weaknesses and beat you with his strengths? Is he, conversely, the defensive coordinator, is he going to be able to limit offense's strengths and make them beat them with their weaknesses? We have no clue. No clue. So as we go into this game tonight, and I'm incredibly intrigued by the game tonight. I think this is the one where you get to see the closest facsimile there of regular NFL football, and it's still not even close. What we learned tonight may be more, but in the grand scheme of things, it will still be meaningless. It'll be exciting because it's the best we got to date, but in the big picture, what happens tonight is still meaningless. They're not game planning against each other. They're not, you know, breaking down, you know, how they can exploit the Patriot defense and vice versa. It's not, that's not what preseason is in the NFL. It's about a progressive step from what you saw last week to this week and moving things forward and getting better every day. I know it's a stupid cliche. It is. But the game tonight, in the grand scheme of things, won't answer any of the questions that we really have. It's going to take 4, 6, 8, maybe 10 weeks this season to start to get answers that we believe in with consistency. So when I go into this season and go into the game tonight, I still have no idea what a realistic expectation is for the year. And that's a weird feeling. Like, Tyler, we go into every season in sports and you go, okay, I feel this team should be this. If they achieve greater than that, I feel really good about it. If they don't achieve up to what I believe they're capable of, then I'm obviously mad. They've underachieved. And I go into this game tonight and this season, and I wouldn't be surprised if they won 4 games. I wouldn't be surprised if they won 8 games. I'd be surprised if they won 9 games. And I would be surprised if they only won 2 games. But they're somewhere in that murky middle, and neither of them are tremendously exciting.
I love exactly how you opened up this show, because for me, I've been saying this for weeks now, the outliers are concernable or exciting, right? If you get to that 9-10 mark, that's super exciting. You go 1-2, that is cause for concern. But where we have them, most of us in Philadelphia, somewhere in that 4-7 win range, is not going to be good enough to make the playoffs. So win total at that point, I think, is basically you're going to throw it out the window. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
I want what you just brought up. I want questions answered. And they can be great answers. They can be bad answers.
But we got to get answers.
I got to get answers.
Yeah.
I need to know. You're right. Is Nick Sirianni the guy on game day? Is Jalen Hurts making progression towards being that guy you can lean on as the franchise quarterback? What is Jalen Reagor's progression in year two? How much does Steven Nelson help everybody kind of play one role down like they should in that secondary? Ton of questions to be answered, and that to me is what I'm looking for in this season. So it is strange to say that this is a season of who knows? You know, you put your palms up, right?
It's about solidifying answers, gaining data, gaining knowledge of what some guys are, what they aren't, who's part of the future, who's the core. Jordan Mailata is obviously a big one. What's the deal with Andre Dillard? You know, you're going to have to turn this offensive line over at certain points with Jason Kelce, who's obviously up there. There's so many questions. And Jaws and Anthony both say it. I'm not concerned about wins this year. I can't ever in my entire 49 years on this planet ever remember thinking that the amount of wins on an NFL schedule for the Eagles didn't matter, that wasn't the benchmark, that wasn't how we were going to judge a team. And I don't disagree with Anthony or Jaws in that regard, because that's almost an ancillary number that we have no idea where the bar of success or failure is even at, let alone to sit there and say, I got to hold them accountable to 6.5 wins like Vegas, or to have more than 8 wins this season. That's how we define success, right? Where you finish in the standings. But that's not how I'm going to, it's not how Jaws or Anthony is going to define success this season, by a number in the win column, which is really weird. Because Vince Lombardi said it. You know, everything's about winning. That's what sports is. It's about winning and not losing. So, and we're in this weird situation where, is it about winning this year? What is it about?
And competition.
Yeah. That's Sirianni's big thing, right? That's what he preaches. That's why he does the rock, paper, scissors and all of those things. And I agree with that approach to coaching, to create competition in all elements, you know, whether it's on the practice field, for position, for playing time, I think that's a good trait to have. But we go into this game tonight, and we'll learn some things tonight. We'll gain a little bit more knowledge. We'll see if things are moving in the right direction. But to go into a season with not only just the Eagles, but really any sports team, and almost not be concerned with the amount of wins that the team will achieve is really odd to me. This is really odd. And it's a weird feeling going into a season because, like I said, there's the question marks, the list of question marks, like the bag of them is just overflowing. There are more question marks than certainties. I mean, there's maybe only a couple of certainties, and they're not of massive consequence. When your quarterback is a huge question mark, when the entire coaching staff and coordinators are all big question marks. And I don't mean that to be negative. I'm not saying Sirianni is a question mark because he's no good. I'm saying we just don't know. The same thing with the defensive coordinator. We don't know. We don't know if Jalen Reagor is going to take a step forward. We feel like we know about Devontae Smith, and when he gets out there, he's going to be a spectacular, dynamic player. Quez has looked great in the preseason, and we feel like maybe they found something here. But overall, I mean, the amount of questions is unparalleled heading into any Eagle season that I can recall. And we've gone into seasons with aspirations of dream team. We've gone into seasons going, Doug was a kind of a boob in year one, and you go into year two and he wins the Super Bowl, right? So none of it makes sense. Sometimes you get those spectacular seasons in sports when you least expect them. Like the Phillies in 07 made the playoffs, and in 08 they went and they won a World Series. They were on a progressive arc. I don't know what the Eagles are on right now. I really don't. So I'm intrigued by tonight. One of the other things I want to talk about, and I want to talk about, you know, the Eagles in the game tonight, what you expect and how you kind of go into this season, that mentality throughout the show today. But Anthony was talking about it, and apparently they caught a lot of criticism on the midday show from yesterday because people thought they were being too negative talking about Philly sports. Now, the Eagles, we just talked about the Eagles and the expectation going in, it's not about wins, blah, blah, blah. But also, the Phillies have now lost two straight to the Diamondbacks, who have a record of 40-81. They're 1 minute, they're steaming, winning eight in a row, take the top spot in the NL East. Now, all of a sudden, they're 3.5 games back. It's easy to look at their schedule and go, oh, they're going to make the playoffs and get all hyped up when they're good, but they're just inconsistent. That's what they are. We know that the Sixers haven't gotten past the second round. The Ben Simmons saga is there. We know the Flyers were abysmal last season when they had some expectations and it was horrible. And we're coming out of the pandemic. Not out of it, but whatever. We're still in it, but you know, you're coming out of a year where there were very limited fans at games and the whole thing. And you know, sometimes maybe people just don't want to hear negativity. And sometimes it's not negativity, it's realism. And I understand that. So they caught a lot of flack for, I guess, just kind of calling it like you see it. And some people want, you know, they tune into the radio or they turn on ESPN or a television show and they want the world to be butterflies and blossoms. And the world isn't butterflies and blossoms sometimes, especially when you're talking about local sports teams. Like I just laid out, it's not butterflies and blossoms here in Philadelphia right now. It's just not. And while you have some great pieces here and some really exciting players like Joel Embiid, you don't, in total, it's not a fantasy world of, well, you must be really lucky to be in Philadelphia and be a sports fan there right now. That's not the feeling others look at Philadelphia and say. We're not the envy of the sports world by any stretch right now. And for the reasons I just laid out. So, you know, I look at it and I go, well, do you want us to lie? Because as I saw that Max Kellerman's being taken off of First Take, I look at disingenuous opinions on sports and hot takes. And I've riffed against the hot take because I think it's one of the biggest turnoffs in sports is the hot take. Like, I can't watch Max Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith go back and forth with manufactured, total BS, disingenuous opinions just because it's a hot take and it's a very, you know, adamant argument. Like, I don't care. I don't want to watch two people argue. I just want, like, kind of facts. I've gotten more into, like, watching stuff like the psychology of a team or the technical aspects of a team and breaking down the film of strategic things that work and don't work. Like, I don't want that fluff of the hot take and all the other garbage anymore. To me, that's just garbage and noise. It's a turnoff to sports. There's certain things in sports that I gravitate towards now. And I've kind of changed too. I don't know why, but over the years, the hot take has come in the last, what would you say, like last 6 years?
Yeah, it's a relatively new concept to our medium.
Yeah, it's come into broadcast, which is sports radio. It's come into writing and clickbait. And it's just part of the deal now. There's guys out there that are into an outlandish opinion because it gains them attention. Whether you're on the radio, it makes the phone ring. Whether you're writing and it gets people to click and be mad at you, whatever it is, I think it's disingenuous garbage is what I think. And I think the people that do it, knowingly do it, I think they're spitting in your face is the way I look at it. Because they think you're dumb. They come up with this dumb opinion just to be the one guy that's on this weird opinion for some reason. And they think that, hey, that you're dumb enough to believe it. And I think some people are dumb enough to believe it. And I think it's disingenuous. And it's a turnoff. So I want to talk about the reasons why we come to sports. Because like I said, the Midday Show caught a lot of crap for being too negative. Are we supposed to break, by the way? Oh, my bad. I'm on the other clock. All right, let's take a break. I'm sorry. I'm on the other clock. I didn't realize that we have a different clock for this show. Filling in for Mikey Miss. We'll come back. I'll continue that thought coming up. 610-632-0975. It is Jason Martinez. That's Tyler. We're back after this on 97.5 The Fanatic.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic. The Mike Missinelli Show.
And to talk about that game and some other elements within the upcoming season, he joins us right now on the Comcast Business Hotline from ESPN.com. It is Tim McManus. T-Mac, how you doing?
There he is. What's going on, man?
I don't know. How's the family?
The family's doing well. Yeah, thank God. Everybody is doing well, getting ready for the school year.
Yeah, I can't wait for that to start. My dishwasher's like yelling mercy at this point.
Yeah, like
24/7. It's insane, man. Tim, let's talk about this game tonight. That's where we should start. First of all, Devontae Smith, what do you expect to see from him in warmups? And that will be, determine whether we see him in the game.
Yeah, and the expectation is that he's going to play in this game. You know, Coach Nick Sirianni talked about it earlier this week and said he thinks it's important for Smith and all the guys to get a little bit of taste of the preseason. This would be the one to do it as long as that knee's holding up. But we did see during joint practices that he was getting some work with the during team drills and that kind of thing. And so he's been taking these baby steps forward. So I do think he's going to end up playing, assuming, like you said, that the warm-ups go well today. But I'm not expecting him to be in there for very long. I mean, you have to be careful with the guy who's coming off a knee injury. Obviously going to be a very important part of your offense. And so I think we'll see a cameo from Devontae Smith. But, you know, that's an encouraging sign for him.
What does he look like in practice to you, Tim? In the limited amount that you've seen him, because he obviously hasn't seen a ton of action. Like you said, he is dealing with the knee, so it's something you don't want to push too hard. But what have you seen out of him and his play so far in the chances you've gotten to observe him?
Yeah, I mean, so we got a little taste in the spring and then a few days in the summer before he went down, and he was just back for the last couple of days. But when he is on the field, you know, things that come to mind is like graceful, like really smooth. He's just got this natural flow about him that I don't really remember seeing in another Eagles receiver since I've been on the beat. Like, I mean, DeSean Jackson obviously stands out for his speed, but the way that Smith moves is just different. You know, so I expect, you know, some pretty big things from him. I mean, there's obviously the factor that he's lighter. You know, comes in at like 160 plus pounds. I mean, that's, you know, there's not a whole lot of precedent for that as a NFL wide receiver, but people seem to like to compare him to like Isaac Bruce and Marvin Harrison and think that he's got that kind of ceiling. And, you know, based off of the limited things I've seen and what I saw at Alabama, I mean, I tend to agree. I think the ceiling is extraordinarily high for him.
Tim, one of the things with Smith and this wide receiver group, Jalen Reagor, by most accounts that I've kind of been reading, is that he's looked far better. And maybe this role with a young group that's kind of coming in and coming up together, Smith, Reagor, maybe Quez Watkins and others, could be the perfect role for a guy like Jalen Reagor. Does he seem just in a different headspace to you this camp as opposed to last year where they just didn't have much of an offseason?
Yes, to that. I mean, talking to people around Reagor, they see a guy who's more relaxed, a guy who's more confident and is allowing kind of the natural ability to shine through. And I think the other part of it, Jason, is, you know, is coaching.
Yeah.
We can go to the day that things started getting better for Jalen Reagor. August 4th was the date. And that was when Sirianni blew up on him in front of everybody, in front of his teammates, in front of the media, in front of the fans that were there at the NovoCare complex. You know, he ran a route that just, for whatever reason, set Sirianni off. And he kind of exploded on him. And he's like, you know, and basically, in no uncertain terms, told him, like, that's enough. I've seen enough of that. Like, it's got to get fixed. And for 2 days, he ended up coaching him really hard. And what you saw was the day after that blow up was the best practice that we had ever seen Jalen Reagor have in an Eagles uniform. And it's kind of just been like a steady trajectory upward since then. We've seen a couple spectacular plays,
yeah,
like the one that, you know, the Eagles caught on camera, that OBJ like one-handed grab. We've seen a couple of those. There's been inconsistencies in his game. I mean, there's still too many drops and it doesn't always look like that, but I think the ability is bubbling to the surface. And the way that Sirianni put it is, like, basically when you marry the ability with proper technique and fundamentals, that's when guys start hitting their ceilings. And I think that Sirianni and the rest of the coaching staff has done a really nice job to this point of getting the most out of Jalen Reagor and the other wide receivers. And you've been able to see progress from just about everybody on that squad.
You know, it's funny because there's just often the debate, can you have a relationship with young players in today's professional sports where you exhibit, quote, tough love, you know, and are hard on the player and still get the most out of them and use that as a tool? It's my contention that that's always a tool. And that's one of the things that we got to learn about Nick Sirianni, Tim, is, you know, what are the hallmarks of him as a coach, you know, both with his players and how he deals with them in good times, bad, and everything in between, and how he also handles things from a strategic standpoint. What if you feel like you've learned over, you know, the summer and this first part of camp so far this year about Nick Sirianni that you feel pretty certain about?
I mean, he came in billed as a player's coach, and there were kind of, you know, the word on him was that he did have an edge to him, but I didn't really know what that looked like. And while I still believe he is a player's coach, there is more of an edge to him than I anticipated.
Yeah.
He is not afraid when he's on the field to chew guys out. But it's not in like a mean-spirited, just for the sake of it way. And it's always followed up by words of encouragement, like going back to that Reagor episode. So he chewed him out, but the next day, you know, there was another time where he went up to him. And then when Reagor started doing, you know, what was expected, I mean, nobody was a bigger cheerleader than Sirianni. He was screaming across the field, you know, like, words of encouragement to Reagor. And so that's kind of how he does it.
I love that.
He's a big stickler for fundamentals. And if he sees something that's not clean and crisp and the way it should be done, he stops you in your tracks and lets you know about it, especially wide receivers. That's kind of, you know, that's his natural coaching spot. That's where he comes from. That's what he focuses on. I mean, he focuses a lot on wide receivers. And that's kind of the way that he is. He will give you kind of, you know, words, you know, of encouragement that are coupled with, you know, some criticism. And at the end of the day, it seems like the guys know where he's coming from. You know, Darius Slay said, he said that Sirianni told them in the beginning of camp that it's all coming from a place of love. I think he kind of established that, and it's well-intentioned just for the idea of getting those guys better. So they seem to receive it well.
Yeah, we're talking with Tim McManus, ESPN.com, on the Comcast Business Hotline. Tim, you know, one of the things about Sirianni, too, that we don't know, both on both sides of the football, really, Sirianni and the defensive coordinator, is what their hallmarks are going to be. Do you get any sense on, for both of those very important positions as play callers on each side of the ball, what kind of the identity will be? Will it be aggressive? Will it be, I don't think passive would be something that we would even, I don't know if that's the right term, but do you get any sense what they will be on each side of the ball from a coordination standpoint?
Yeah, so let's start with the offensive side. I mean, one thing that we'll see as, I think, a bit of a difference is one of the more bizarre stats from last year is that the Eagles led the league in vertical routes run, even though they were having big issues on the offensive line. The quarterback couldn't find his way out, and, you know, they were just depleted. They were still just doing like four verticals all the time. It was mind-numbing. Whereas you saw the Colts on the other side, it's more shorter routes, the intermediate routes, get the ball in the playmaker's hands and let them go and create. And I think that's, you're going to see a little bit more of that. I think there's going to be an emphasis on the screen game a little bit heavier. But also to play to Jalen Hurts' skill set, I mean, you're going to be throwing the ball deep and they're going to be taking their shots, because one of the things that has shined about Hurts is the touch on the deep ball. It's one of his strengths. So you're going to see some RPOs mixed in. I think that's going to be a pretty heavy part of the offense. Get the ball out quick, and then obviously there's going to be those moments where Jalen Hurts gets to create. On the defensive side of the ball, it's definitely going to be more multiple than we saw under Jim Schwartz. And we've already seen both some 4-3 and some 34 looks out of Jonathan Gannon. He likes to do a lot of pre-snap disguise, whereas Schwartz would just be like, we're going to line up, and this is what we are, and this is what we do, and everybody knows what's coming. Gannon is not that way. Gannon is going to be sending pressure from places that aren't expected. He's going to be giving the quarterback one look, and then they're going to bounce out of that before the snap and actually go to something else in the name of confusing them. So it's going to be a zone heavy, but they're going to be mixing and matching and trying to complicate things for the opposing quarterback.
Very interesting. Talking with Tim McManus on the Comcast Business Hotline. Tim, you know, going into this season, there's very few areas that I feel like there's certainty in what we know in observation. You know, we don't know what Sirianni's going to be like come regular season and game planning for opponents and exploiting opposition weaknesses, defending it defensively and all of those things, and coupled with maybe questions of Jalen Hurts as taking that next step as an NFL level, you know, quarterback and everything that goes along with it. But when you go into this season, you know, Jaws was asked by Anthony earlier today, what he expects from the Eagles this year. And Jaws' initial answer, I thought, was so honest and so true, was, I don't know. What do you feel like you expect out of this team this year, other than, you know, them to be a team that's got some accountability? Because that sounds like Nick Sirianni there in a nutshell.
Yeah, I would say that my expectations have grown over the course of the last handful of weeks. I mean, I was in the camp of, you know, there's so many ifs surrounding this team. Yeah. It's kind of a team in transition and all that kind of stuff. But the more that I've observed the team, the more that my personal expectations have grown for what they can be and maybe should be. I think that, you know, they have strength along both fronts. The defensive line is going to be the primary strength of this team. I do believe that. I think that they're deep, and I think that they're going to be creating a lot of havoc. And, you know, that's a hallmark of a good team, is if you can be strong along both fronts. Of course, we know the offensive front needs to be healthy, and the older guys need to have just one more good season of prime years together. That's certainly no guarantee. There was questions around the quarterback, and I would say that my expectations have grown for him, because he has shown, I think, a lot of growth over the last just handful of weeks here, Jason. I mean, you know, watching those joint practices with the Patriots, he was the best quarterback on the field.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really close. Like, it wasn't Cam Newton, it wasn't Mac Jones, it wasn't Joe Flacco, it was Jalen Hurts. And I think that he's got a strong command of this offense. He's obviously got the leadership part down, and I think he's going to be a little bit better than at least the national media is portraying it at this moment. You know, so, and then they got some skill players that are coming along. We mentioned Jalen Reagor along with Devontae Smith. Quez Watkins is looking really good. I think Miles Sanders is poised for a big year. So, you know, a long way of answering the question. I think that the question marks are starting to fade a little bit more for me. And I think that, you know, what I'm starting to see is a team that is going to be better than I think a lot of the forecasters had them as.
Yeah, I think it was easy to just forecast them as, you know, as a 4-win team from last year, and, you know, team devoid of talent, but so many question marks. But that's fascinating to hear you say that. And that gets me excited, you know, not only for tonight, but this season, because we all want this thing to move in the right direction, right? And
yeah.
I mean, you're looking for this team to go back and recoil quickly.
Right. Yeah, no question. I mean, you know, of course there's going to be injuries and there's going to be hiccups, and there still are a lot of things that need to be answered. But one of the major things for me was Sirianni, and that still needs to be all figured out. Like, how does he and the youngest coaching staff in the NFL make it all work on game days and preparation and all that sort of stuff? But the initial concerns with, oh my God, that was a terrible press conference. Yeah. And is this guy over his head and all those sort of things have been washed away slowly for me as I've observed him on a daily basis. I've watched how his teams have performed on the practice field, seen how he has handled himself, and then watched in that first preseason game, you know, the operations seemed like it was running pretty crisply. So I think that, you know, that's part of my calculations. I think that he's going to end up being a little bit better than maybe initially anticipated as well.
Yeah, you're actually seeing things that matter, not just the silly press conference, right? It's all we had to go to one at that point. And, well, Tim, this is fascinating. I can't wait for tonight. Thanks for doing this, as always. Stay well, and we'll talk soon, brother.
All right, always my pleasure, man. Good catching up.
There he is, Tim McManus on the Comcast Business Hotline.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic. It is the 5 o'clock hour, which is brought to you by Guided Door and Window. Take advantage of Guided Door and Window's big summer sales event, and you can receive 40% off all windows and doors. Call 1-877-GO-GUIDA or visit GOGUIDA.com. 610-632-0975. Tim McManus got me all pumped up for tonight and all pumped up for the season. I should have just called him like a week ago. I got all pumped up then. But Tim doesn't just throw around compliments, but he's been impressed, and his expectations have increased, and thinks maybe the Eagles may be better than we all thought heading into this camp in this offseason. And he's been impressed with Sirianni. Said Jalen Hurts was really impressive this week in joint practices. It was the best quarterback on the field. It wasn't Cam Newton. It was Jalen Hurts. Devontae Smith, he said, is graceful in the way he moves. He didn't say this, but imagine like a ballet dancer, like Baryshnikov. I don't know. I can't wait to see tonight. I can't wait to see Devontae Smith tonight. It's not going to be a lot from the starters, so don't get up and go to the refrigerator too quickly. But I'm pretty excited, and I was really happy to hear that Sirianni can be hard on the players and hold them to accountability. I think that's important. 610-632-0975. Let's get to Drew, and then I got a question for Tyler and a question for the audience that is going to be an interesting one. Let's go to Drew in Norristown on the Fanatic. Yo, Drew.
Hey, Jason. How you doing?
Doing good.
To Sirianni's point about, you know, getting on Rager, you can only go to that well so many times, but it is effective if it's warranted. As far as the Birds doing well for the NFC, I actually placed a wager on them to win the NFC. It's a value bet. You know, the NFC East is terrible traditionally, so who knows what they could do.
So you bet on them not to win the division, but to win the NFC, so go to the Super Bowl?
No.
Oh.
No, the division.
Okay. NFC. Oh, okay.
Let's not get crazy. Come on.
Yeah, I was going to say, you could have just dropped off the money here, and I would have taken the bet. What kind of odds did you get to win the division?
I think it was plus 225 or plus 270 something. I think betting 100, you win like six or something like that. I forget what it was.
You're really invested in this bet, are you?
But it's like a set it and forget it. Like, if it works out, it's a big payoff. Not a big payoff, but kind of a okay payoff. If it doesn't, you know, and worst case scenario, best case scenario, if they do actually win the NFC, then that means they played well and they're in, you know, they won the NFC.
Yeah, I see them here right now at like plus to win the division, plus 260.
Yeah.
So if you bet 100, you'd win 260.
Yeah, so it's not that terrible of a bet, I think.
I don't think any team in the division you could bet to win the division is a terrible bet. Dallas is the favorite. But, I mean, look, I think Washington's live. I think they're all live.
Yeah. But Sirianni's doing okay so far, but we'll see how the games go. And, you know, like I said, he can only go to that well so many times to jump down a player's throat. So
it's got to be authentic. It can't be fake, right? That's the big thing. You can't just do it to do it. You have to do it when it's warranted, because players see through fakeness very easily. They know if a guy's being authentic. Now, I see the Eagles here. Actually, sorry, at plus 475. I was reading that wrong.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was.
Yeah, 475. Like Dallas plus 130. Washington plus 230. Giants plus 450. And the Eagles plus 475.
Yeah. I think they're a little... All three of those other teams are, you know, wrecked in their own aspects at some point. So, who knows?
Yeah.
Like I said, if it pays off, then that means the Birds did well. So, that's good.
Okay, yeah, I like that. Plus 475, that's not bad. Just a little flyer. How much did you throw down? Did you throw a hundo down?
100, yeah.
Well, look at you. All right, good stuff, man. Hey, I appreciate it, Drew. Enjoy the game tonight, all right?
All right, thanks for the flyer stuff, too, Jason. Appreciate it.
No, no problem, thank you. Plus 475, worth a little value bet for you to win the division?
No, I don't think so. I think that we need to stop with the blanket overarching statement that the whole division is terrible.
Well, that was last year.
Well, I think it sounded like he was going in at on it this year, too. And
there's some variables there. Like, it's probably... Nobody's great, but...
Right, it's probably the worst division of all of them, I would think. But it's not a meaningless division. I think Washington's got an elite defense. Dallas has their quarterback back and a good offense. It's not great, but... It's not meaningless.
No, I mean, look, Dallas, if Dak, the shoulder is not a problem and he can stay healthy and perform well and that offensive line, and obviously they have some really good receivers and they have a good running back. They can be really good offensively. They have some good defensive parts as well. That's why they're the favorite. But would it shock you if the wheels fall off the wagon of any of these teams? No, but for it to fall off the other three and the Eagles to significantly outperform the rest of the division, I think, is unlikely. But I don't know. Tim got me excited. A little bit excited. Let me ask you a question, because I was listening. I forget what I was listening to, but it was a conversation about baseball, and the term on the bump was used. Wheeler on the bump and rake was being used for hitting. And it got me thinking, you know, of all the four sports, which sport has the most ridiculous or annoying vernacular vocabulary that's attached to it?
Okay.
So let's quantify that real quick before we determine the answer. Baseball, it's got, you know, those terms like, Zach Wheeler's on the bump, or, you know, they were raking today when it comes to hitting. You know,
about dealing.
Yeah, dealing is one. But every sport's got their, you know, set of things that, you know, terms that they use that are specific to that sport.
Right. You got NBA. You got The Rock.
Yeah. Shoot the rock.
The cup.
Yep. Take it to the rack.
Right.
In the NBA, they're a little less kind of hokey, I think. You could shoot the three ball. 3-and-D, you have some in there, but they're not very hokey. Like baseball with rake and on the bump and those, they're a little bit hokey. In football, you got like this overuse of words where
it's very cliche.
It is. Hand in the dirt, you know, he's a high motor guy, or, you know, all the different ones that they have. You know, the New York football Giants. You know, or we got to score the football. And in basketball, score the basketball. Not just the ball.
Thanks.
Everything's got to be football, or, you know, you have to, you know, they got to win the football game. That you don't have to win the game. It's like this overuse of words.
Yeah, and I think football is, like I said, the biggest cliche. We got to run to establish the pass.
Yeah.
You got to do, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Great, you know, offenses win games, defenses win championships. You know, all the cliches and things that's around. But no sport's probably got more cliches than hockey, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
Some really bad ones. You know, cycle, dump and chair. You know, all those things. But you also have, like, you know, the specific, you know, buzzwords and, you know, like...
Get pucks on the net.
Yeah, pucks in deep. You know, just like the cliche things that are said, and hockey's got all the nicknames.
Well, and I think with hockey specifically, more than any of them, is the cliche player and coach interview.
Mm-hmm.
You never, ever, ever get anything like from a player mm-hmm. when you're talking. It's you know.
Because they'll never use the word I. It's always
it's we.
We.
Yeah, we. Yeah, we got to grind. We got to get back to playing our game. We got to, you know, get more pucks on net. Get more, like you said, get the pucks in deep. It's a lot of the same stuff.
Yeah, I had Barry Melrose on my podcast last week, and he said that, and this is true, in that sport, that players won't even take big endorsement deals because they would catch crap for it in the locker room. It would be like a look at me thing. And the sport is so not about me. It's about we, that a lot of times players won't become big endorsement figures because it would be all about them.
That's strange, because I think that there are certain players that it works so well for, whether it's your nickname or the way that you play or anything like that. Like the first one I think of is there has to be 100 different like Whole Foods, you know, like places that sell, you know, foods that are good for you, knocking down Nathan McKinnon's door.
Yeah.
After that story that came out where he's mm-hmm. like, get all this junk food out of the locker room. You're not, yeah. If I'm here, you're not eating it.
Yeah, you're eating salmon, not pizza.
You know, but then you got guys like with nicknames, right? Like David Pastrnak, you got to think at some point he's got to be a sponsor for a pasta company.
But he has one. He has Dunkin' Donuts.
Right.
But you're right. Yeah, you're right. Because of pasta, he should be doing like San Giorgio spaghetti.
Right. That's, you know, it's strange to me that they wouldn't take it just because it seems like a pride thing.
Yeah. But which sport has the hokiest vernacular? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I mean, I think it's very clearly between baseball and hockey.
I think basketball almost is not a factor on this list.
I would agree.
Because it's not, it certainly has its own vocabulary, but not to the degree the other three sports do.
Well, and then you mentioned the hokiness to some of them, specifically baseball and hockey.
Yeah.
It's kind of, there's some cheesy ones. There's some ones where you're just like, oh, can we stop using that?
Yeah, there's some bad ones. Like hockey's got like the whole subculture of verbiage.
Talking about lettuce?
Yeah. An apple, celly for a celebration, like a goal celebration.
Right.
I mean, there's some pretty, that's probably got the cheesiest one. Almost funny, comical, like stupid, purposely stupid ones. But like baseball, I find some of the ones in baseball annoying. I find a lot of the ones in football annoying now too. They like the hand in the dirt thing is annoying. Like that, it's enough with like the hand in the dirt.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's become almost like you used this phrase earlier. It's almost a caricature of itself.
Yeah,
those words are. Like the buzzwords for each particular sport has almost become a caricature of itself when it comes to.
And like when you hear certain people use them, you're like, dude, stop. You know what I mean? Like you hear when someone, like if someone like me is like, oh my God, like the Phillies raked yesterday. I sound like an idiot saying that.
Well, and I think it depends on your particular sport. If I were to come in and start using hockey verbiage, you'd be like, you're kind of out of your element here a little bit, Tyler. Yeah. What are you doing?
Like, but you're trying too hard.
But, you know, I am, you know, when you spend enough time on the ice, the hardwood, the floor, the court, whatever it might be,
Diamond.
And you yeah. use these things, right? Like, I very instinctively, I got a roll two here, talking about a double play.
Yeah.
Right? But I've used that phrase a million times in my life. Got a roll two.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But if I were to come in and be like...
To me, that would be, it would sound manufactured. If I did.
Sure. And this is vice versa for hockey for us.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because I think it's incredibly like hokey that there is like a separate set of verbiage for each sport. And some of them, like, I think if I said like, oh, like Fletcher Cox has got to get his hand in the dirt, like that just doesn't roll off of my tongue.
Sure.
It doesn't sound right for me saying it. Like if Baldy says it, like I go, okay, you know, Baldy's a hand in the dirt guy.
Well, right? you got to be a little bit more, I guess, holistic. So you would say something like, Fletcher Cox got to be a little bit more aggressive.
Yeah.
It means the same thing.
Exactly.
But from us non-football players.
Yeah, like I can't speak baseball. I haven't earned the right to speak baseball
well,
verbiage.
I mean, you could certainly try.
Yeah, but it would sound disingenuous.
Sound odd. Sure.
Yeah, it would sound like I'm trying too hard to talk like a baseball player. Because I'm not. And you see it all the time. You see people, you know, and what we do too in sports radio or just, you know, when you're around a certain sport, you see people trying to speak the language of the sport, even though it doesn't, they're doing it purposely to fit in, but it's not authentic because it's not just what would roll off their tongue if they weren't around the sport.
Well, I think that there's a lot of times, like if I go to a Phillies game, and if not working, not covering the game, just going as a fan.
Yeah, sitting in the stands.
I have to remind myself, like, don't be a jerk. Because I've watched and consumed thousands of baseball games and played hundreds of baseball games. And that, like, if somebody two rows below me is having a conversation about the game and I can hear what they're talking about.
Yeah, that's right.
And I don't want to be like, that's not right.
Yeah,
you're wrong. Wrong. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be a jerk and... Hey, by the way, remember in the third inning when you were talking about that? Yeah, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you're right. And you find yourself like you want to say something. Like you hear people talking sometimes and you're like, oh, well, so-and-so is not good at this. And you're like, dude, that's literally one of the things he's best at. Like, what are you talking about?
But I also don't want to be a jerk. We're all there to enjoy the game.
Yeah, and you're entitled to your opinion. However, sometimes it's uneducated. But like me talking, going like, oh my God, like the Phillies raked today. Like I would sound like an idiot. You know, like that would.
Oh, I promise you they're not raking today. They have one hit.
Okay. Shocking. Well, isn't it Bumgarner going today?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's seven innings, 82 pitches.
Jeez. Efficiency. So I guess the Phillies are not raking today.
Like I would say no.
You hear some people like say it, like they're trying to fit in sometimes and just. It's like trying to be something you're not. And there is, like, it's hard for me to do it with football and with baseball because it's just not natural. And some of them are, I guess the hockey one obviously is more natural because I basically live in a rink, whether it's because of playing or being around, doing what I do for a living, covering the team or working for the team. And then obviously I coach my son's team. I play men, the whole thing. So I'm always around it and I've always have been. So that's like natural to me, but when I work with Harry, like he'd constantly break my stones because of the way I spoke about the game. So, but I just thought it was funny that you hear certain things like, and I hear sometimes people use those terms, and I'm just like, dude, you stop. You can't use those terms. Like you don't have the cachet in that sport to use the terms. But I guess it's kind of funny anyway. All right, 610-632. I just wanted to mention that. And I just wonder from people, like, which one's the most annoying? And you're right, though, about the nickname, too. Does baseball do anything with the nicknames?
I mean, most of the guys, when you play, get a nickname at some point.
So how does the nickname work in baseball? Like, you're a baseball guy.
Yeah, I mean, so they're all totally different. Like, for example, growing up, I could count on one hand the amount of people that called me Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
That like the kids my age, right, when I was growing up, because I was Teasel from an early age. It was my first letter and a couple letters in my last name.
Yeah.
That's a big one. But, you know, it's a lot of shortened stuff. So like a buddy of mine's last name is Wagner. We've called him Wags for years.
Yep.
But it's not as consistent as the hockey is where it's just kind of add the Y.
Yeah, that's formulaic.
Yes.
Yeah. Like you just take the name and add to it, and so in your experience, it's been shortened,
yes,
but not added to.
It's also with us for like, and I can only speak for like our group of guys growing up. Most of the guys that we played baseball with, we call them by their last name.
Okay,
there are very few guys do we have first name basis, especially when you have multiple guys with the same first name. Like we had multiple Matts on our team growing up, that wasn't going to work. So you got to go last name.
See, your last name would provide a problem for the hockey nickname. So there would have to be a special set of.
Yeah, because I've got the E at the end of the name.
Yeah, you already have the Zulie so you don't just take like the haze and make it hazy. But what you would do with your name, if I were to apply it to the hockey nickname algorithm, which I'm very familiar with, it would become Zulzy.
Oh, so it wouldn't just be Zulz. No. That's where I would see hockey go.
No, it would, really? You'd have to go to a Zulzy.
I see, that's totally different.
Yeah, you would become a Zulzy, not just Zulz. You know what I mean? Well,
yeah.
Like, Couturier goes to Coots, but you would go to Zulzy.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah. But you got to make it longer for some reason. I don't know why. So in baseball, and yours was Teasel?
Yes.
Like Fozzle?
Yeah, I guess you could go that way. Yeah.
Okay. That's a weird one. A Teasel was on. I would not have predicted that would have been it. See, like mine never went into the hockey algorithm. My nickname, like the people in my personal life don't call me Jason. They don't call me Martinez, believe it or not. They call me Mert.
You mean they get your name correct?
Yeah, and they call me Mert. Like, so when somebody calls on the radio and says, yo, Mert, I automatically assume
they
that
know you.
It's somebody from my personal life.
Right, that makes sense.
And when people, like, will tweet me Mert, and I know they don't know me from my personal life, and if they're critical, I'm like, you don't have the right to call me that. So I get protective of it. But, so mine never, despite the fact that I grew up my entire life playing, I didn't get the hockey nickname. I didn't go to Mertzy. Although Linda from Mayfair, or now Bala Kenwood, calls me Mertzy. So I didn't get that nickname, which is odd, too.
Yeah, it's strange, because it just seems like it's, like you said, it's so formulaic when it comes to hockey.
Yeah.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.